The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once-a-week, only-on-Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is best policies versus companion animals. But before we get started, checking in with you guys to see how you're all doing, and I hope you guys are doing well. I hope that things are picking up in your areas. Already all around the country, it's so exciting to see businesses coming back and good things happening. But boy, I'll tell you, this is a country, unfortunately, that just has a lot of division, a lot of other issues that it's going to have to contend with here. But I hope that you're doing well. That's what's important. And I'm here just to encourage you and to hopefully give you some ideas about things that you can do, even in the midst of a virus crisis that's going on here, whatever it is that may be happening. I definitely think that there's a lot of things you can do. There's a lot of people making money right now, kind of crazy in a lot of different ways. But we've got the real estate market focused in on. So I'm going to be talking about a lot of different things that you can do there, and probably talking less and less about COVID-19. But just again, want to encourage you. And I think there's a lot of great stuff happening. I've been trying to share the good stuff with you. Well, I'm going to be talking about pet policies and companion animals, which doesn't sound all that romantic of an idea. But before we do that, I've got a tip of the week here. I'm going to share it out of our good friend here, Ken McElroy, who's been a guest on podcast. He has the ABCs of Real Estate Investing. This one is from his book called The Advanced Guide to Real Estate Investing. And it likes to look at, some of the myths out there too, and things that people think you have to do to get into real estate investing. I'm going to be sharing these too, because I think these are a lot of holdbacks for people. Like, well, you know, what about this or what about this? He really tries to debunk a lot of these myths that are out there. And I've done that as well in a lot of the Fun Fact Friday episodes. So I'm just going to zero in real quick here. The big myth that, hey, to do real estate investing, you have to know somebody. Well, and again, I'm just reading from the book here because he did a good job on this. The old business adage goes, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. And that's true, well, in business. It's not necessarily true, however, in investing. You don't need to know anyone connected with real estate investing in order to get started. In investing, it's all about what you know, because what you know will determine who you know. Once you have found a good deal, you will be able to attract investors. But in order to find a good deal, you need to know how to spot one. And again, this is Ken talking. He goes, here's what I mean. I purchased a building in Oklahoma City. I'd never been to Oklahoma before I invested there. I didn't know a soul in the city. What I did know was that its economy was on the upswing, and the apartment market there was affordable to invest in. Therefore, there were some good deals with profit potential. I felt sure I had to invest there. From my office, I spent a lot of time reading about Oklahoma City and its submarkets, and then I looked at broker listings and evaluated individual properties. Finally, I found an awesome deal. The first person I contacted in Oklahoma was the broker who had listed the deal, which would be a normal thing to do, right? Through him, I was able to get the names of local experts, as well as more up-to-date financials from my operational analysis of the property, and some helpful data on the local market. I then did some internet research on Oklahoma City property managers, city officials, other brokers, and so on. Before I ever set foot in Oklahoma City to look at the property, and before I had ever met anyone there, I already had a number of meetings lined up to begin the process of assembling my team. My deal created the opportunity to meet my team members, not the other way around. Hey, if you build it, they will come, to quote from that movie with Kevin Costner, you know, right? So anyway, you know, the point here is that, you know, a lot of times you think, gosh, you got to have connections to get into this city or connections to do that. Well, when you just kind of follow the course, you find the properties, you will be open up to contact with people that can help you give the, you know, get the information that you need to be able to dig deeper and to decide if it's a good buy or if it's a good market. So I think this myth here that you need to know somebody is something that really isn't true, because if you just go through the course of trying to purchase a property, you will make those contacts of the people you need to know to get things done. And it grows from there. It definitely grows from there. But for the most part, for commercial real estate anyway, the broker is really key. Finding a good broker that you really feel comfortable with, not only will they open you up to meeting all these other people, but if you go through and you close the deal, they're going to be your source of the next bunch of deals you may get there. So once they see that you're serious about buying, then you become one that gets things like pocket listings and, you know, those exclusive off-market deals that everybody always wants to get. So let's move on to pets. Now, you know, like I said, I'm taking a little bit of break here from COVID-19 related stories, because I want this see the podcast community get back to normal too. So anyway, have you ever had to deal, though, with the challenges of allowing pets in your rentals? Now, some of you may have houses, some of you may have apartments, some are, you know, looking at different things. Maybe you got mobile home parks, maybe there's all kinds of different things. But pets are a very real reality. And don't get me wrong, I am a pet lover. I love especially dogs. I'm not a big cat person, but, you know, I've had them before, dogs, cats, fish, turtles, you name it. But when it comes to pet damage to your rental properties, I've also seen that firsthand. And it can be devastating. I had one lady, she was in the third kind of a basement level of an apartment that, that was, you know, it was kind of a little dark as it was, not a lot of light and everything in this area. But she, I found out after I inherited the building there that that she had a cat. So I didn't think that much about it. Well, one cat turned into six cats. And this is in a little studio apartment. And I'm going, oh my goodness. And then the smell just started to reek, and it went up to the other two levels. Like it was just really, really rough. And she wouldn't leave without, if she had to leave her cat. So she eventually had to leave, and it was tough because I really liked her. She was a real sweet lady, but it was just, she'd let the cats out during the day and they just kind of go and pee in the halls. And cat pee is like, well, it just has a stench that's killer. Well, you know, dogs can be equally a problem too. I mean, they can also have the same issue in terms of peeing all the time. Chewing on things. I mean, I've seen even dogs that can, you know, chew through walls. So we just came to the conclusion, especially in our place, because in that particular apartment, it's just too small. And smells, you know, we also instituted a no smoking policy for the same reason, because, you know, you can smoke in one apartment and it smoke fills up the hall. It just gets really bad. So trying to stick true to it. Another thing too is people can leave during the day and the dog just all of a sudden misses their owner and just starts yapping. And dogs can go for hours and hours just barking. And so, this just trying to prevent some of those issues. Anyway, so in that process, I've had people come to me and say, hey, I've got a service animal. Can I bring it? And without answering yes or no, just try to get as much information as I have. So I found out that HUD has a policy and some information that might be helpful to those of you that are dealing with this or may deal with it somewhere down the road. So basically, okay, there's a kind of this new challenge with the so-called service animals. Now, a lot of people call a lot of different pets that they have service animals, and they're not technically a service animal. When someone tells you they have a therapy dog or a service animal, we have to know what to do as a landlord. So HUD has issued a Housing and Urban Development, just for those that don't know who HUD is, has issued a new set of rules clarifying the responsibilities landlords shoulder regarding companion animals, another name for them, in rental spaces. Fairly new notice on service animals and assistance animals for people with disabilities in housing and HUD funded programs. That's the name of the notice. Woo. Discusses how the Fair Housing Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, intersect regarding the use of service or assistance animals by persons with disabilities. So that's where a lot of this comes from. The Fair Housing Act prohibits landlords from discriminating based on disability, race, color, national origin, religion, sex, and family-related status. The ADA prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities in employment, transportation, public accommodations, communications, and state and local government activities. Both laws contain provisions which address the use of service or assistance animals by people with disabilities. Now, I have no problem with that. A well-trained dog, especially the ones that are really trained to be service animals, are wonderful for people that have disabilities. I've seen them used by people that can't see. I've seen, people that have used them for all kinds of, emotional issues, and they're very effective. So, back to this. John Trezvina, and he was the former HUD Assistant Secretary for Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity, says disability-related complaints, including those that involve assistance animals, are the most common discrimination complaint they receive. That's pretty amazing. HUD's new notice explains housing providers' obligations under the Fair Housing Act, including their requirement to provide reasonable accommodations to people with disabilities who require assistance animals. Pet restrictions cannot be used to deny or limit housing to people with disabilities who require use of an assistance animal because of their disability. Housing providers must grant reasonable accommodations in such instances in accordance with the law. According to the notice, two threshold questions must be addressed when a tenant asks for a companion animal. Number one, does the person seeking to use and live with the animal have a disability, i.e., a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activity? Number two, does the person making the request have a disability-related need for an assistance animal? In other words, does the animal work, provide assistance, perform tasks or services for the benefit of the person with a disability, or provide emotional support that alleviates one or more of the identified symptoms or effects of a person's existing disability? If the answer to question one or two is no, then the law does not require a modification of an existing no pets policy, and the reasonable accommodation request may be denied. However, if the answer to this question is yes, or either of these questions is yes, the landlord must modify or provide an exception to a no pets policy to permit a person with a disability to live with and use an assistant animal in areas of the premises where persons are normally allowed to go. unless doing so would impose an undue financial and administrative burden or would fundamentally alter the nature of the housing provider's services. For example, if you're, and this is an extreme, okay, if your service animal happened to be an elephant, okay, or a horse, okay, just kind of thinking about that. Or maybe, you know, maybe it's an alligator. I don't know. Okay. But certain things would definitely be difficult to accommodate. Certain animals. A request for companion animal also may be denied if, number one, the specific assistance animal in question poses a direct threat to the health or safety of others that cannot be reduced or eliminated by another reasonable accommodation, i.e. crocodiles. Okay. Or two, the specific assistance animal in question would cause substantial physical damage to the property of others that cannot be reduced or eliminated by another reasonable accommodation, such as breed, size, weight limitations may not be applied to an assistance animal. A determination that an assistance animal poses a direct threat of harm to others or would cause substantial physical damage to the property of others must be based on an individualized assessment that relies on objective evidence that the specific animal's actual conduct. A determination that an assistance animal poses a direct threat of harm to others or would cause substantial physical damage to the property of others must be based on an individualized assessment that relies on objective evidence about the specific animal's actual conduct, okay? Not on mere speculation or fear about the types of harm or damage an animal may cause and not evidence about harm or damage that other animals have caused. Conditions and restrictions that housing providers apply to pets may not be applied to assistance animals. For example, while housing providers may require applicants or residents to pay a pet deposit, those rules cannot be applied to companion animals. Landlord cannot deny a reasonable accommodation request because they're not certain whether the person seeking the accommodation has a disability or a disability-related need for an assistance animal. Housing providers may ask individuals who have disabilities that they are not readily apparent or known to the provider to submit reliable documentation of a disability and their disability-related need for assistance animal. Now, that's kind of a loaded one there, but the idea is you're really not supposed to question it and say, you know, what's your disability? Why do you need this dog? Instead, what you'd ask for is a documentation of the need for the animal, so as an assistance animal. If the disability is readily apparent or known, but the disability-related need for the assistance animal is not, the housing provider may ask the individual to provide documentation of the disability-related need for an assistance animal. For example, the housing provider may ask persons who are seeking a reasonable accommodation for an assistance animal to provide emotional support. They must provide documentation from a physician, psychiatrist, social worker, psychologist, or other mental health professional that the animal provides emotional support that alleviates one or more of the identified symptoms or effects of an existing disability. Such documentation is sufficient if it establishes that an individual has a disability that the animal in question will provide some type of disability-related assistance or emotional support. However, a landlord may not ask a tenant or applicant to provide documentation showing the disability or disability-related need for an assistance animal if the disability or disability-related need is readily apparent or already known to the provider. A housing provider also may not ask an applicant or tenant to provide access to medical records or medical providers or provide detailed or extensive information or documentation of a person's physical or mental impairments. Wow, it's a lot of ors. Okay. While HUD makes it clear that private landlords have a legal duty under the Fair Housing Act to accept any qualifying companion animal into a rental property, the Department of Justice has narrowed its definition of service animals allowed into government and educational facilities under the ADA to, quote, any dog that is individually trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of an individual with a disability, including a physical, sensory, psychiatric, intellectual, or other mental disability. Emotional support animals are expressly precluded. So that's kind of interesting. You know, the Justice Department excludes emotional support animals, but we are not necessarily supposed to do that. So nonetheless, I think that, you know, that's a place to get started. What I didn't see and I looked for was some sort of an organization that specifically certifies service animals. And maybe some of you guys listening maybe know some info we can add on to this into the show notes. So if you guys hear this and you could forward that information to me, I'd love to hear it too. So that's pretty much the overview in terms of what HUD says that we can do regarding and should do regarding, you know, no pet policies, you know, versus companion animals. Well, that's it for today. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today can be accessed in our show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode entitled Pet Policies versus Companion Animals. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks for listening and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.